On this episode of DC On Screen, Jason and I have seen James Gunn's The Suicide Squad. We'll be gracing your ears with a spoiler-filled review, plus the results of our Deadpool, right after these winsome words from Wanton Wares Peddlers. Welcome into DC On Screen, episode 642. On this podcast, we share our honest opinions about the DC Comics multiverse on film and television. If it has been released, it is fair game, so beware of spoilers. I'm David C. Robertson, and this, the man who bit off part of a friend's ear during a Key West hotel brawl, Jason Goss.
He had it coming.
I mean, of course he did.
Judge is working against
with
me.
You. I don't even want to hear the story. I just believe you. let's see. Before we get into this review, I would like to remind you that you can go to dconscreen.com to find links to our Patreon, where $5 a month gets you access to exclusive content. There's also a donate button and a link to our merch store if you'd like to support us in other ways. And as always, thank you for any support you can throw our way. We did get a new patron named Steve. Mm-hmm. I can't pronounce his last name, but my God, thank you very much for your support.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All right, man. You said you wanted to do the Deadpool first, right?
Yep.
All right. For those of you who don't know, we some months ago came up with a Deadpool for all the people who would be buying it in the Suicide Squad. And what have you got, Jason? Because I don't remember what I picked.
No, and that's why I put it down in cuneiforms.
So
we could, go over it later. I have a J and a D column. I can only guess who those are. But we have Waller, Rick Flag, Harley, Boomerang, Bloodsport, Polka Dot, Peacemaker, Savant, Javelin, Ratcatcher 2, Thinker, Mongal, Blackguard, Sosaria, TDK, Weasel, and King Shark.
Mm-hmm.
So if there were bigger characters in the film, as we have seen it now, or some of these were lesser, that's not taken into account here.
Yeah.
We agreed to just take Harley off the board.
Yeah. And I think that was wise.
as part of a Deadpool. Like, yeah, let's assume she's going to make it. So.
If we had done this for Zack Snyder's Justice League, we would have not been correct on that at all.
Agree. Now,
ballsy bastard.
We did it as like we're picking a team of people who are more likely to die. So we're going to go over the numbers of like who actually won that. But I think the tiebreaker for us was going to be like who picked the first death accurately.
Uh-huh.
But in terms of the order of deaths, we had Weasel, Blackguard, Thinker, Javelin, Sosoria, Bloodsport.
Uh-huh.
We didn't get all these right.
No.
TDK, Polka Dot, Mongal, Ratcatcher 2, King Shark, Rick Flag, Savant, Boomerang, Peacemaker, and Waller.
Mm-hmm.
To my credit.
Yeah.
I get extra points for Weasel first, I believe.
Well,
to my discredit, I get none.
Yeah. Exactly. So, zero zip, nada.
So the question is, given who died first that actually is like straight dead?
Yeah, that was Blackguard.
I think that was Blackguard. Like, I think you've got that one.
Like, Jesus, was freaking Cassie David writing it? Oh, my Lord.
I mean.
No, I'm just kidding.
That's solid.
But
let's see. The only thing we have to rule out, I'm going to put an A by everyone who's still alive. Uh-huh. So, by the way, still alive given the stingers. Waller. Let's see. Bloodsport still alive. Peacemaker, he's still hanging in there. I still would like to think Javelin's alive somewhere because that's part of his character in the books, but whatever. Sosoria, still gone. That was a whole
Yep.
We had all these speculations about powers and possibilities. Fuck all that. It just, that was not what was happening with that character at all.
Nah.
All right, so we get five. All right, so the people alive. Waller, Bloodsport, Peacemaker, Blackguard, I'm sorry. No. Sulsaria, Weasel, King Shark, and Harley, as we put her to the side, still lives. Yep. All right. So we still have on the board nine people lived or died. Oof. All right. This was close. In your Deadpool that was still dead at the end of the film. Uh-huh. And granted, you pick some sports, man. Boomerang, Rick Flag, even Polka Dot.
Uh-huh.
Thinker, Mongal, all that. Nope. Some of those are mine. Anyway, so... Look at the wrong side of the page for a second. So, you picked some sports, though. Rick Flag, Boomerang, Polka Dot, those were all yours. Yep. Wait. Hold on. Rick Flag, you had him. Dead. Boomerang, had him. Dead. Polka Dot, you had him. Dead. Javelin, mm-hmm. you had him. Dead. I had. TDK, dead. I had Mongal. Dead. I had Thinker. Dead. I had Savant. Dead. If you just added up that with me, it's 4-4.
Yeah.
The fucked up tiebreaker is that I had Weasel as my first pick for someone who was actually dead, and the stinger fucked me.
Yeah, it did.
You had Blackguard as the actual first dead, and congratulations, sir. I believe that means you have won the Deadpool.
Awesome.
Because Blackguard... got very dead.
Very quick.
Very without very equivocation. Quick. He is very mm-hmm. dead.
Yeah.
Well, that'll put Dave as the winner of this one.
How you doing?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you want to move into the actual review?
Yep.
All right. Okay, so let's see. How to begin. I liked this movie.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what I say. At any given point, for the rest of this review, don't trick yourself into thinking I don't like it. That's all I'm saying. Because I know some of our listeners, not people that we normally talk to, but there are people out there who are going to be like, one negative remark.
Yeah.
You hated it. I did not hate it. I liked it maybe a little more than the original Suicide Squad, which I liked. And that's, understanding that the theatrical cut is a mangled mess of bullshit from the studio. I'd love to see David Ayer's cut. I did enjoy it as it was. I did enjoy this as it is. And it probably does the fact that it wasn't supposedly meddled in. Now, we heard the same thing about Birds of Prey to some degree. And now we're at release the Yan cut. So
yeah,
and we'll see. But yeah, no, I enjoyed it. I had a few issues that really kind of hung me up a little bit, but it wasn't anything like Wonder Woman 1984 or anything like that. Like this was solid, I thought. How did you feel overall?
No, I believe that same train of thought. Deeply solid. I enjoyed myself. There were a couple things that weren't, that didn't perfectly hit, but yeah, I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yeah.
Stayed up late last night watching, knowing the consequences.
Yeah. So I knew he was going to go. I felt it in me bones, man. I didn't want to see Boomer go though. I like Boomerang so much.
Yeah, I agree. And
though it may have been worth it for that look he gave Harley as he was about, when he knew he was about to die, it was just like, well, on to the next adventure, I guess. Like, he just... it's going to catch up to me eventually.
No, it's like it happens to the best of us,
Yeah.
And there was this slight pause just for a second. Like, there's a moment where you see him, like, stung with kind of shrapnel. And you're like, can he survive it? And then he looks a little bit stunned. And then the fires engulf him. And you're like, he's not going to make that. There's no throwing yourself out of that situation.
Yeah.
That boy died.
And for what it's worth, I really liked Harley's reaction when she knew he was about to die. I you know, they have stressed over and over again, this is not a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
I disagree. Y'all are some liars. Because we have, like, of the fleetingest of moments with Harley and Boomerang on the plane, and then, or the helicopter, whatever the hell it was. And, but certainly not enough to, like, give it weight. Like, I felt like, sorry, whether or not he was screwed or not, Ayer in the previous movie did the heavy lifting on Harley's, on where Harley is in this movie, on her reaction to Boomerang, on any kind of weight we're supposed to feel for Boomerang dying. That's not necessarily a bad thing. I'm just saying, like, as its own movie, that apparently we don't need to see the first one, you know, as they keep hammering into our heads. You kind of do. You kind of need to see the first
one. I mean, yeah, but there was a nice back and forth for that. Like, you mm-hmm. could just watch this and not.
You could.
Really have to worry about it, because you do get the sense in the movie, just in character, but that, like, some of them have a certain rapport, but mm-hmm. it does deepen it to know where the rapport, you know, comes from.
Yeah. And it's not that deep. It's not that big of a deal, but, you know, I'm sure there are plenty of people who never saw the original Suicide Squad and just went, okay, they're friends. They know each other.
I mean, there will be plenty of people that do that, but I mean, I feel like a large amount of the people that watch this movie are aware of the rest of the DC universe.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many moments where you, like, all right, so Harley and Rick Flagg's relationship, you know, yeah. just both the introduction with the, like, you know, I had to go number two, even later where she just looks sad and she's like, he was my friend.
Yeah.
Like a real moment out of her, which mm-hmm. was really nice. Yeah. But, you know, given that, and then earlier in it where it was just, you know, Rick and Boomerang, like there are moments even with, there are moments where the previous relationships of the four or five people that are from the previous movie.
Yeah.
They didn't just neglect it. They didn't just reintroduce them like nothing happened.
Yeah. And that's kind of why I feel like it's more of a sequel than they're trying to. That's WB marketing up and down, just being like, it's not a sequel, it's a standalone. Bullshit. It's not carrying over a storyline, but it's carrying over a premise and a ton of the characters. And it's kind of a sequel. It is.
Yeah.
At the very least, a spiritual sequel. But,
yeah.
Now, as that's going to bring me to this, as much as I really love seeing Margot Robbie play Harley Quinn, kind of didn't feel like she was really needed in this movie. Like, a lot of, like, her storyline with, like, the president was interesting, but not enough to be in the movie. Like, I liked the fact that she, you know, he starts talking about killing kids and shit and she just blows him away. That was really cool.
No, I think that's exactly the reason that it deserves to be in the movie. I mean, it was a cool scene.
It was a cool scene.
Yeah, but it was like a cool scene given the context of the movie as far as, like, where the uprising starts. And
yeah.
Like, she has many a moment in the last act of the movie that I think are pretty integral and could only have been done by someone like her that needed to be there.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Dives in that starfish's face.
I don't know. I don't know, man. But it did seem to take a turn. And let me ask you this. Look, I enjoyed everything that Harley did. I liked when she shot him. He's dying. She's like explaining, like, look, man, I've got bad taste in men.
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
Weirdly, one of my favorite parts of him dying is how much time they gave him to die. Like the confusion.
Yeah, that was rough.
The fighting for his life. Like the whole thing was like, and the whole time she's just monologuing. I loved every second of that.
Yeah, I did enjoy that. Were you, like, wondering, like, if they were going to address the fire? Because they started a pretty big fire while they were getting down.
Nah.
And then they, like, show them, like, in the aftermath of the boning.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got what sounds like I don't know if it was actually in the movie or if it was like our cat's water filter behind us, behind me. It sounded like there was still fire crackling. It could have been a fireplace. I'm not sure. But I thought for sure they were going to be like, we should do something about this fire. And then just never came to fruition.
I mean, I kind of agree. There was also one of the things the last couple films of last few films, all of them with her have done really well is just not quite knowing where reality sets in with her.
Yeah.
Like there's that. And then there's the flower scene later.
Yeah. And the little cartoon birds mm-hmm, and stuff. Mm-hmm. By the way, can I just bitch for a second
sure.
about did James Gunn like did he transpose his fear of birds onto freaking Bloodsport's fear of rats? Did someone lock him in a box full of birds at some point? Why we gotta kill so many birds in this movie? I felt genuinely terrible for all of these birds. I know they're not real.
I know.
But it was just like, oh God, why are we killing their birds? I don't understand.
I think it's because it's a kind of innocent thing, and why would you? Like, the first bird in the movie is like, why would you kill that thing?
Why? Yeah, it's like, here's how we let you know that and this guy's a Savant, bad guy. And you
see think about it. Like, I cannot. You know what? Fuck it.
He's got to kill a bird, yeah. And that's how we know that he's a really bad piece of shit.
I think it's a...
And then later,
are canaries yellow?
Probably. Mm. I don't think they're black, if that's what you're getting at.
No, they're definitely not, that part. Did he?
And I know someone out there is thinking it.
Did he kill a canary? Because, God damn it, that is...
That would be really good.
A metaphor.
Because Savant was a big villain in Birds of Prey in the comics, and he was always coming after Black Canary.
Okay, well, I didn't think about that. I was just thinking, like, the canary in the coal mine thing, the metaphor.
Oh, okay. No, I was thinking about the actual.
No, yours is more exciting. Canary. I like that. Let's do that. I just looked up a couple pictures. And I think that was a canary.
Yeah. And I feel like I have to go back. My statement about canaries not being black was specifically about the actual birds, not about any casting choices they made in Birds of Prey. I loved Journey Smollett. I know how some people misconstrue these things. That's not what I was going for, y'all.
Yeah.
oh my God, just Twitter is ruining my mind. Y'all, I didn't mean it that way.
Yeah, I get it.
Now, no, see, but see, seriously, I would have loved to have seen more of Savant. I would love to see, like, every person that died, I wanted to see more of. But it had nothing to do with the job that this movie did. It was just, I know these people. I read comics. I want to see more.
Like, for me, it was 50-50. Like, there are about 50% of the people who died, I thought, yep, that checks. And the other 50%, I guess it was like, man, I wanted more time with that person. And, you know, a small margin of them were just heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Some of them, yes and
Flag.
No. Yeah.
Flag got me. Flag, I did not want to see that dude go.
I did not.
And I felt I didn't want to see Polka Dot Man go.
Those were the two for me. I actually
liked him enough.
Yeah, those were the two for me that were like, God damn it, man.
Man Boomerang for me. I just didn't want to see Boomerang go.
I'll give you this, though. He died so early and in such a chaotic scene that I was like, well, that's just part of what I'm dealing with right now. So we'll just put that to the side.
Yeah.
And yeah, I love that character and that actor. And
as much as I love Peter Capaldi, I was okay when Thinker got ripped apart.
It didn't. I mean, all right. So that's what, like, this movie didn't just, like, kill people for the fuck of it. It killed people because it was either a thing that might happen or because they fucking deserved it. And when Thinker just gets shredded and then thrown against glass and turned to pulp, I was like, yeah, he had that coming. Nope, this checks, man.
No, he did. He did. Yeah. Now, if James Gunn wants to make a movie or a HBO Max series chronicling the life of Thinker.
Oh, I want to see the life of Thinker. And I want to see a whole mini series about him experimenting and trying to, like, take Starro's power and somehow maximize it for himself. Like, I want all of that because, you know, first of all, it's neat. And second, it's Peter fucking Capaldi.
Right.
I'm down for all of it.
How much did you love when Ratcatcher 2 was like, do you want a bunch of rats up your ass? And he's like, I think you'd be surprised by my answer.
That did really surprise me. And I laughed my ass off. Yeah. Don't assume shit about people. Honest people will surprise you with their answers.
Yeah. You know, I felt, you know, I enjoyed the movie quite a bit. I did feel like there were some boring parts for me, but there were, I think my biggest issue, like, was probably it felt like there were less stakes than I wanted there to be, like, not as much character development.
Oh, no.
As I had hoped. See,
that's the fun part. So there's character development in some ways, but it's an ensemble cast and you can't spend the entire thing developing. Like if you wanted to do that, we need to give you like a 3-season series. You can't do all of that. Like Polka Dot's mother, like the only time you ever saw her was when she was this like gleaming villain.
That's all I needed though.
I get it.
Like I am interested in, you know, what else they, I would like to see more of that story.
I would love to see, like, okay, what the hell did his mother do to him exactly?
Yeah.
I mean, I love the Bates reference. That was hilarious. But like, I loved, a lot of what, and by the way, Demolition, just fucking killed it in this role.
Yeah.
A guy who we, to be completely, fucking transparent, like lambasted because of certain choices in Flash, but he's one of those guys, like, he's capable of so much. And then certain roles, you get into it and you're like, what happened here? And then you see him other places and you go, oh my God, this guy's going to fucking kill things. Like, he is deeply talented. But
David Dostmalchian's choices, whether they were his or producers in The Flash, you know, he was a showman. He was, you know, he was abracadabra, for God's sake. He was over the top.
I mean, don't forget him in Gotham. Same kind of thing.
I know. But when they did his episode, and I don't remember where it fell, if you're caught up, but they did an episode where it, like, revealed, like, why he is the way he is and, like, the people he's lost and shit. Like, I think it was definitely post-Crisis. Like, he found out about Crisis, basically. And
wait, was that this season?
He lost people. It may have been. I don't remember. But, dude, he killed it. Like, I felt horrible for him. Like, he did a really good job.
I don't know if I'm just memory blanking on having watched that or not, but I doubt you 0%. Like, the guy is fantastic. And then occasionally I just see him in something and go, what happened here?
Yeah.
But as we've talked about before, like, you know, it's never his fault. Like, we feel like it's never his fault. But his character here, like, man, I did want some backstory. The fuck is he doing with the interdimensional, you know, abilities?
Virus, yeah.
And just having to, you know, go in the woods and spin it out every once in a while, like it was a fucking Taibo class or something. I don't know what's going on with that.
Right. You know, at the worst possible.
Go Richard Simmons just shit in the wood and get rid of my interdimensional virus.
At the worst possible time, I read an article where I saw something online about how they're saying that to curb your chances of prostate cancer, men should ejaculate 21 times a month. And then I watched this movie and he like goes off into the woods and he's like ejaculating these polka dots basically.
Yeah.
And I looked over at my wife who I had told about the article and I was like, prostate cancer.
Multidimensional prostate cancer. What are you going to do?
Yeah. He like got up out of that sleeping bag.
Taylor Swift like, to shake it off, bro.
Yeah, man. He got out of that sleeping bag. I was like, that is a swollen prostate, my friend.
Yep. You know, the old swollen face prostate. We get it all.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, see? Blue balls are real. If you let them go long enough, they turn into red and yellow and green and all sorts of
things. Yeah.
And they come up on your face.
Whole spectrum of problem.
I really enjoyed John Cena and Idris Elba's chemistry. I liked the rivalry from the very, like, as soon as he was like talking about a smaller bullet, I was like, man, that's going to come into play later when y'all are actually fighting. And, you know, that's always going to be a negative for me, is when I can see the things coming.
No, I mean, that's a positive, though. If they've let it in well and given you some string to pull later, that's a good thing.
It's a good thing if you don't predict it. But if, no, you know, I mean, when you see it the second time and you go, oh, yeah.
Okay. That's so I get that. It depends on genre for me. Like, if later I'm like, oh, you know what? They didn't give me that information. Depending on the genre, sometimes I'm like, man, I just appreciated being going through it the first time. In a film like this, though, like when you have these lead-ins later, I'm pretty happy about it just on site that day.
Mm, okay. Yeah, you know, sometimes it's just a little on the nose for me, and this was one of those. Mm-hmm. But
now I would argue that Elba delivered it pretty on the nose. Like,
oh, he was fantastic.
It was very much how, like, and he almost flippantly is like, "Small a bullet," and just moves on with his fucking day. Like, he has bigger problems than this asswipe.
I was very pleasantly surprised, by the way,
with
that they did not force any kind of relationship, like love relationship, romantic relationship between Ratcatcher 2 and Bloodsport, because the trailers made it seem like that was totally what was going to happen.
I don't know.
And they didn't do it.
It did lead to it a little bit, but, you know, just for funsies, it's a nice thing about the film was that that's not where any of this was heading. That's not what we're doing right now. Like,
I did enjoy that. I
no one got a romantic like this, kiss at the end and a Bogart moment.
I don't need that. I don't need that.
Not for this film in particular. Like, just, you know how many motherfuckers died?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, died. You know, good God. Let's talk about that in a minute. Like, when people died, they fucking died.
I can't help but hope that there's another Suicide Squad movie coming with Mongol coming to Earth to wreak havoc on us for revenge over his sister's death.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see James Gunn doing War World. Of course I do.
Wait, his sister's unceremonious death on top of
that. God, it was so sad.
It was just like, she just makes one deeply, deeply poor choice. And
between her and freaking Bloodsport setting men on fire, I'm like, me and my wife are both having like flashbacks, like Vietnam flashbacks to freaking Luke Cage.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, oh God, no. Oh my God.
Look, I did really enjoy the scene early on about where they just kill everyone, and then like find out they could have probably just walked in there.
Yeah. When Sol Soraya was like, those were my people. Yeah. Those were good guys. Like, oh.
Yeah. And then they kind of try to back off a little bit. Like, well, I mean, you know, we didn't know that.
I mean, it was funny, but it was also sort of a sad, sour note. I didn't know how to feel. It was like, oh God, am I supposed to laugh? This is weird. I kind of want to laugh, but this is really bad.
I mean, but I feel like that was very Suicide Squad-y.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not saying it wasn't.
That kind of moment was pretty on point, I feel.
Yeah. I'll be honest, I'm a little sad Javelin went so quick. I enjoy Flula Borg quite a bit.
Oh, everyone does. He's one of those persons that you could probably just have at a random dinner, and it's going to improve the dinner. He's one of those people, as far as I can tell.
Yeah. I did not expect Nathan Fillion to last at all in this movie. I was very pleased with Margot Robbie's response. Like, when he pops his arms out and starts just slapping dudes.
Yeah.
And Margot looks and goes, what the fuck? Like, that is the correct response. Thank you.
He starts like mage handing people. And the part that I loved so much about that, like, I don't remember exactly how he died. I think it was just like rough blood loss. But he just kind of, he sends his arms out there.
Uh-huh.
And I do love this about the film. Like, the physics of just sending an arm out there. Like, what the fuck is behind it? Like, what can you do? You're just going to kind of like dual slap some people for a second.
Yeah.
Just like fasten their cheeks, you know, and that's all you can possibly fucking do. And they did a really good job of that. And then, like, there's even, like, one of my favorite parts is, like, he even has to, he tries to, like, retreat with his arms, and they just get bullet riddled. And he's just sitting there, like, just laying around. Ah, like, what the fuck did you think was going to happen right now?
Yeah.
I don't know. One of the things the film did really well was play with expectations. And expectations of powers in particular was pretty good. Like, well, expectations of both powers and, you know, personal props. Like, Weasel dying so early. Like, did anyone check he could swim? That's hilarious. That's fucking hilarious. And I love that they looked over at the guy playing King Shark in mocap and asked about that. And he was like, next question. That's fantastic. Like, even Savant, like, look at how they led him up to the film. Like, he is the start of this film. And, you know, they're laying out his abilities. He's a, you know, a fucking strategist and a hand-to-hand combatant that, you know, no one can keep up with him. Great. And then he saves Weasel. He tries to, at least. He's the one out of the crowd that goes back for Weasel. And you're supposed to be thinking, like, okay, well, maybe this is, like, the leader of the squad. And then he gets there.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's sitting there watching, you know, this whole battle go down and people are dying. And, you know, it's getting worse. And there's a moment where you, like, they frame him. And Gunn did a great job of this. They frame him for just a second as, like, kind of interpreting the field. And, you know, you maybe think he's about to just go crazy and fucking solve this problem. And then he just fucks off into the sea.
Yeah, he's like, nope.
Just nopes the fuck out. Yeah. And it didn't make a ton of sense for the character, I guess. But we hadn't had so much time with him that I'm like that upset about that. I mean, it was playing with expectations. Like, that was that was part of Gunn's point here. And I'm down for it. Like, that was funny. And they kill the fuck out of him.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just literally a couple shots of just fish coming up to pick at him.
Yeah. And that bird that, just, that, like, bird flew down and that had to happen.
Yeah, that did have to happen.
Did you feel that the constant stop, because they kept stopping at pivotal moments to cut back to an earlier time, I kind of felt like that was really disjointed. That took me out of it quite a bit. Like, I really liked it felt like a comic book, but in a way that I didn't really need or want in some ways. Like,
I mean,
like, the perfect example is when Peacemaker's about to kill Ratcatcher 2, and then it's like 8 minutes earlier, and we see what the rest of the team has been up to, and you're like, oh, this is how they stop that from happening. Where I sort of, part of me wishes that he had been cutting back and forth between teams the whole time and just, like, had it cut into a way that it just all kind of felt more, it flowed more naturally.
Yeah, I mean,
small hang up.
No, I mean, for me, yes and no for me. Like, I think the part that works for me is exactly that, the comic thing. And, you know, him being able to stop and reframe, like a wide shot to introduce the scene. Introduce the scene again. I don't know. I enjoyed that so much that I wasn't upset about that at all. And it was the same reference point you had to use to, or the same mechanism you had to use to be able to go back to, you know, certain characters just in their history, which, granted, like, there are plenty of character moments early on, like before the action, a little bit of origin story going on here and there that I thought were deeply important, but you couldn't do that for every motherfucker in this film. Like, you just can't. So I liked the picking and choosing part, and I liked that necessarily the film wasn't just, you know, 1x time going forward. It worked for me. Okay. Like, being able to bounce around a little bit worked for me. And I think it had the added benefit of being able to take you in and out of the stakes for just a minute.
Okay.
Like, when he's about to kill Ratcatcher, it was like, well, I don't know. Let's see what happened 8 minutes ago. And then you see it from 8 minutes ago and you go, oh, no, he actually is a piece of shit. But for a moment, given the context of the film, when you see that moment, you're like, well, I don't know. I mean, maybe there's something maybe there's some salvation here, and then no, there really isn't.
I did love how there it felt like, and it's very cynical of Gunn, but I did like how Flag and Peacemaker represented like two different kind of extremist ideas of America to some degree.
Oh yeah, for sure. There is some real American commentary in the film.
The part of it that is a hang up for me though is that, you know, Rick Flag has been part of a covert ops with Amanda Waller for quite some time. He didn't think America was doing some really messed up shit. Like the way he acts, sort of like, what they were doing, what, like, you didn't, they're putting bombs in supervillains' heads and killing them wantonly.
Look, I agree, but that trope has worked since Scarface. I won't kill no kids, man, or whatever the fuck the phrase is.
I would argue that trope hasn't worked since Scarface. I get it.
I would argue that the trope is around for a reason.
But, you know, Harley has the same hang-up. She's like, you know, I'm not, yeah, I was with you until you said you were killing kids. And, no.
Yeah. It is a real problem. I mean, just their back and forths. Like, yeah, Peacemaker has these, like, traditionalist talking points about just, you know, for liberty, I'd eat a beach full of dicks and all that. And it's It is a lot of fun. And you kind of understand later why.
I wish that joke hadn't been in the trailer, because I would have enjoyed that a lot more seeing it in the movie.
I do agree there. Like, not seeing that coming, I would have. Sorry. Not seeing that coming, I would have appreciated it more. But, you know, his back and forths with you know, what I would do for liberty and all that, they're fine. And then you see him kind of become the villain of the film, and that's all well and good. And, you know, with good reason, like in the context of this film, he's, you know, actively a piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and like I said, cynical as hell from James Gunn to actually kill the hope of America and have Peacemaker live, piece of shit.
I know. But what I'm curious of is, like, to have done that turn where he made him such a, like, static character in some ways. To the point that he kills this extremely dynamic character, which, granted, I agree, he should have seen some shit, and Rick Flag should have known better to some extent. But
yeah,
part of what was addressed in this film was everyone kind of deciding that, you know, they had drunk too much of Waller's Kool-Aid, you know, complete with golf club to the head.
Yeah.
Which was funny, but I didn't quite – it's one of those moments where, like, I didn't quite understand in the context of that office why she was the one who swung at her. But that beside the point. Like, I,
because they need someone to be dead.
Yeah. Like,
I see, they didn't say it in the movie, but I speculate that, and maybe in Peacemaker, you know, Flo lived. Well, but I don't think she did. I think, like, you know, look, she knocked her out, and then King Shark guy and Amelia, whatever, they went along with it. So they're getting punished by being sent, as we saw in the post-credits sequence, obvious tee up for the Peacemaker HBO Max series. They're being sent as punishment to wrangle Peacemaker.
Oh, yeah. No, I fully believe the person who actually clubbed Amanda Waller, she probably killed with her own hands.
Probably, I would imagine. Or maybe she'll have a worse fate.
No, I mean, like, look, for Waller, she probably made her feel comfortable, made her feel like, you know, yeah, I'm glad you called me on that and all that. And then just found her one night while she was alone watching Netflix, wandered into her apartment and, you know, made it look like a suicide.
Yeah. And, you know, after some torture. We're talking about, you know, that point has been an area of contention among a lot of people that I've seen today who felt like Amanda Waller was more of a badass, was more terrifying in the first movie because she's just willing to, like, pull out a gun and bop, 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 kill her entire team.
I mean, she is, but if she thinks her teams under her thumb and someone actually
right
pulls out her golf club. Like, look, man, you can.
She's not just brutal. She's also a, you know, strategist.
The history of dictators and is a history of assassinations, like, you know, with exceptions for sure. But you get that much power and you do it with that much of a, you know, murderous thumb. Eventually someone comes for you too.
Yeah. And you know, that
I think it applies here. Like, she lived by the sword, yeah, you know,
she was covering her ass in that first film when she shot everybody. Also there may have been sort of a, there's a scene in Seinfeld where George has had sex with a cleaning lady in his office, and he had sex with her on the desk. And he's called into the boss's office, and he says, "It has come to my attention that you engaged in sexual intercourse with the cleaning woman on your desk." And George goes, "Who said that?" And he says, "She did." And George just kind of squints and goes, "Was that wrong? Should I have not have done that?" Because at my previous job. So, like, I have this idea of, like, some big high-up, like, calling Amanda Waller into the office. Like, it has come to my attention that you killed every person who was working IT, basically. Every person on your team, you murdered them. Was that wrong?
Yeah, I mean, counterpoint, were they replaceable?
Yeah.
Damn it. I mean, it was one of the funniest parts of that movie, and that move even to me in the first movie was, like, how wrong was she? Did they have information that was absolutely crucial, like nuclear?
Yeah.
And, you know, part two, can other people do their job? Yeah, probably. Let's get on LinkedIn. We can probably fill those positions.
Yeah. So, you know, if they have certain amount of information and they're valuable to a certain, you know, degree, and they're not just, you know, random agents who have now too much information, yeah, I can see her just punishing them, doing something like sending them to deal with Cena.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I could. It was one of my favorite turns, though, is just how, and I'm curious now, knowing that we have his series coming. That was one of the parts that kind of turned me on in the film, was just watching how evil he got over the course of it and thinking, like, how the fuck are they going to make a series about this asshole?
Yeah. I really, I liked how, like, he's not even really evil. He's just crazy as shit. He thinks what he's doing is right, which is my favorite kind of villain.
I mean, yeah, I agree. I mean, that is, but he.
I have to admit, though, after he killed Rick, I was like, I don't even want to see his stupid show. I don't want to see his stupid face anymore.
That was a genuine moment in the movie for me, where it's like, I'm done with him. I wanted Rick. That guy's fantastic.
I liked Rick Flagg.
I did. And I wasn't as sold on him until, like, I don't know, like my third viewing of Suicide Squad, where I was like, you know, man, this guy's fantastic and doing a great job with Rick Flagg. And if anything, what sold me later was hearing him actually do the kind of Southern accent.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought, man, I'd forgotten how much I enjoyed his portrayal here. And he gets shanked. He gets shanked hard. Look, quick thing I feel like we should talk about. When people die in this film, they fucking died.
Unless they were Weasel.
But, like I said.
Or Peacemaker.
Like I said, and I say this being the one that lost that as the tiebreaker. When people died in this film, they fucking died. When they didn't, they didn't.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, come on, man. Like,
astute observation.
But it applies here. Like, they didn't just kill Rick Flagg. They did a fucking, like, they did an X-ray. They showed it, like,
ripping his heart open.
He had an enterogram of his heart being opened by a piece of random tile.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't even the only one. Like, Boomerang just engulfed. Mongal engulfed by flames. Yeah. Like, Weasel was one thing. Savant.
They literally showed Boomerang's charred arm holding up
his
final Boomerang. Yeah.
The stainless steel Boomerang still fine at the top of the charred arm. Fucking lamplighter up there. Like, there was plenty there to they were all just when you died, you died. Like Thinker. Oh fuck, he died. He died the fuck.
Yeah, ripped in half and then thrown against a big piece of glass.
Yeah.
Like a window or whatever it was.
Yeah. Drawn, quartered, and smushed. He did not make it.
And yet, you know,
the one that really did crack me up that was Rick Flag, because it was like, it was leaning into the trope of like, well, you hadn't seen a body yet? Mm-hmm. Let me show you something.
Mm-hmm.
Even then, like, going into the trope, Waller goes down. Not sure if she's dead. She's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Bloodsport gets some hits. He's fine. Polka Dot, he did not make it.
He got squished big time.
Got super squished.
Poor bastard. The one second he's happy in the film.
Yeah, he has one moment. You know what? I loved that for him, though. He had one fucking moment of unbridled joy, and he got to die that way. And instantly. And I was like, you know what?
That's fair.
He has had a depressed life. That dude, like, he had a hint of serotonin. He sniffed it. And that's how he went out. And I don't know what the hell that guy's mom did to him, because we didn't have time to go back for his story. But
she experimented on him in Star Labs. That's what we know.
I mean, I know there was that, but it was like, we didn't go back in detail and do like a, you know, it wasn't like Batwoman season one with Alice or something like that. It was
right.
We didn't get the full story. We just knew that lady was bad. That's all we knew. And I was willing to believe him on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, like that was quick. Mongol was quick. Blackguard. Oh, fuck.
Dude.
His face just went into another dimension.
for a hot minute, I legitimately thought they had killed King Shark, and I was gonna be pissed. Because King Shark wound up being my favorite character in the whole damn movie.
Yeah, he killed it.
Just, the poor bastard. Like, I felt so bad for him. He was like, I don't have friends. Oh, you poor piece of shit.
Oh, and he has this little, you know, the arc where his friends are the aquarium buddies. And then they just try to eat him alive.
Yeah, that was sad.
It really was. Like, I would have been genuinely mad at James Gunn if he had given me that story arc where he was kind of that pathetic of a character and then had that little tease moment and just become a taken advantage of character over and over again. And then he killed him afterward, like immediately after. Oh, God.
Yeah. And I have to say, Ratcatcher 2, probably my second favorite character in the film. And she won me over the second she was like, you guys lay off of him. And then she's like, makes friends with King Shark. She literally just almost got eaten. And she's like, no, you don't understand. We're friends, right? Friends don't eat. Friends aren't noms.
Oh, I forget what she said in that moment. It was like, it was something along the lines of like, if this is a bad decision, I'd rather die that way or something.
If it's something like, if love is a bad decision, something like that.
Yes. It was one of those like really stupid sentiments that makes me fucking choke up every time. Cause I'm like, God damn it. That's just, she's a better person.
Yeah, dude. She had my heart this whole stupid movie. And, I did like her dad was Taika Waititi. Her dad was Ratcatcher.
Oh, yeah.
And, that was solid.
And Taiki's just this like straight lovable junkie. That was actually a neat backstory. I really enjoyed their backstory.
I did too. I liked her a lot.
Just a good soul with a problem, you know?
Yeah. I feel bad for Milton, but it was totally worth that dude getting killed.
Fuck, I forgot about Milton.
Like Harley to be like, who's Milton?
And then later, like,
he's
Milton.
Literally been with us the entire time. Yeah. And she's like, oh, Milton. And then, like, a few minutes later, she thinks that Bloodsport was Milton. Oh, that was solid.
It was.
That was awful. A lot of fun.
You know, something I really enjoyed about the film is, like, you, at no point in the film do you believe anything fucking Harley says.
Yeah, no, you shouldn't.
And you shouldn't.
Well, the one thing I did believe.
First of all, they do a good job of showing her getting her like fucking consciousness knocked out of her and still just kind of like laughing and being who she is. And
uh-huh.
I really loved that fucking scene. The torture scene with her is phenomenal because,
yes,
I mean, first of all, it shows she's just a goddamn badass. But second, it's like reality doesn't mean anything for her. And the rest of the film does a really good job of that. Like, it, you know, I didn't even know who Milton was. Then like 5 seconds later, I was super attached to Milton. How dare you?
Yeah.
And like she she's about to suffocate in the fucking eyeball of a star, and all she can do is look around at how pretty the rats are swimming around. Like it.
Well, I mean, they were.
I mean, they were.
It was all.
It was very visually entertaining.
It was.
Credits to Gunn on all that. I mean, the flowers behind her in that one scene were just gorgeous. It was fantastic.
Yeah. You know, talking to you here and not being half asleep and trying to mull over what I'm thinking. I think I liked it more than I think I'm walking out of this review liking it more. And I feel like it's one of those movies where I'm going to revisit it probably more often than a lot of the other DCEU films. And I'm going to enjoy it more and more. It's going to be a Man of Steel for me, where I'm probably going to keep liking it more and more. But, you know.
Look, I think so.
What can you say?
I mean, I've had the same instinct myself over the course of the day. I stayed up last night longer than was advisable and watched it.
Mm-hmm.
Because devil stopped me, you know?
Yeah.
And watched it, enjoyed the shit out of it. But, I went to bed with questions. I was like, man, you know, certain points are kind of weird, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, overall, the last 24 hours, it's
grown on you.
Yeah. And it's not even that it didn't. I was neutral to some things. And, you know, I haven't grown sour on the things that I was neutral on necessarily. Like, there are plenty of things that we could talk about as far as, like, did this get developed a lot and all this. But, you know, whatever. It was an ensemble cast of. Fuck, we have 18 people listed. Nope, 17, because we took Carly off the board. Mm-hmm. Listed as, you know, possible. It was an ensemble cast. And they did an incredible job of giving us this super defined, very, you know, emotionally invested picture of a lot of these characters. And especially the ones that were going to be with us for a while. And even... Yeah. You know, the film did a great job of breaking expectations and giving us a glimpse of people and just fucking ripping them out the fucking, just jettisoning the whole character arc there.
Yeah, to some detriment, I still think. I would have loved to have seen more of Sol Saraya. I felt like we didn't get nearly enough of her.
No, all right. So, you know, sometimes like you get a DVD and there's like a little... 5-minute sub story of some person that you didn't get to see in the background, a little EPK feature or something.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that would be perfect for her. Like, how the fuck did she go from, you know, being part of this whole fucking battle scene to actually like taking control of that country? I would love to see, I would watch a 15-minute, you know, I'd watch an hour's worth. I would watch a pretty good chunk, frankly, but I'm curious too. And there's a lot to explore there. And you can take it as a con, as like, well, the film didn't give us that, or you can take it as a positive, like, well, there's a lot we could do with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would have liked to have seen a little more of Pete Davidson, Blackguard, setting up the betrayal.
Now, see,
I mean, there are little things I would have liked to have seen.
I agree, and I didn't.
It wasn't needed.
I kind of wanted to go back and watch. Like, was there like a was he like on the phone in the background of the prison early on or something?
Yeah.
Where did that get tied in? The funniest part to me is to hear you say at all that you would like to see any more of Pete Davidson in any capacity.
That is a big deal. I don't like Pete Davidson.
You do not. I think you have a chemical disinterest in this person. And
the most interested I've ever been in him is that I found out that Larry David's daughter dated him for 2 years, no less.
I keep wanting to watch the Fire Vote of the King of New Jersey or whatever it is. I like the guy. I wanted to see more of him here. And then when he got his fucking face departed, I thought, all right, well, that's the tone of the film. And whew, no ambiguity to his death. He gone.
I'll tell you this. I don't like him on a personal level. like his last Netflix special, he totally slut shamed Ariana Grande.
Oh,
and I just didn't. I wasn't okay with that.
No, that's not like, okay.
When he starts like publicly telling personal intimate details, and yeah, he's a child. He needs to shut up.
I don't. Fair. I don't. I haven't care. Seen that, but yeah, that's not but, okay.
You know. No, I.
couldn't stand behind that in any capacity.
And I know he cheated on Larry David's daughter. I know he did, based on what he said in that special. So I don't like him.
I get you.
I think he's kind of a sleaze, but whatever, man. You know, I was fine with seeing his face blown out. But from a storytelling perspective, I would have liked to have maybe seen a little. But we got the point.
No, I mean. The point was there, and it was kind of funny. And again, like the scene itself has one of those like expectation moments where you see this guy, you know, leave the little foxhole they're in and hop out and try to like take the edge off. But he's this deeply armed guy, and you keep thinking he's going to like pull his guns out and go crazy. And instead, he just gets, you know just degloved on the face.
Yeah. And I like the themes of fathers and children in this film, because we had stuff from John Cena about his dad. We had stuff from Bloodsport about his dad, and then subsequently about his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had the rat catchers, like I guess parents too, but just parents because of Dawson Malshian's mother.
Mm-hmm.
I liked all of that. I thought it was good. I like that kind of thing.
No, there is. And there's a lot of characters like in this that, you know, didn't necessarily have good mentorship in any capacity growing up. Like, you know, I'm not saying you have to have that to grow up and turn into any kind of person. I'm just saying it does help when you have like an example to go by.
Yeah. But the themes of parents with their children is also a thing that like is over a lot of Snyder stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the DCU has, you know, deals with that. So I don't know. I liked that. I liked that quite a bit.
Yeah.
What else you got, man? You got anything else? I liked the music.
Music was good. Let's see. I'm just looking at some characters here. King Shark, fantastic.
So much fun.
He maybe Sly had the best Stallone arc was the way to go.
Man, I just... Dude, okay. Can I say this about Starro? Right before Starro dies, and someone says, I was happy.
Oh, fuck.
I was floating and staring at the stars.
Yeah.
Oh,
that was rough. Like this, it had some, I don't know. It wasn't like a comment on, you know, American intellectual or scientific curiosity going too far.
One single line, it turned a freaking mindless kaiju creature into like a real character.
Yeah.
Like,
a real character who was dying, by the way.
Yeah, like just, oh God.
Yeah.
That broke my heart a little bit.
It was rough. You know, this, one of the only things like it, and it just may have been, that I've, you know, I'm in the middle of a very long week and stayed up to watch this and just, maybe I didn't have the emotional energy. I didn't actually cry watching this film, and I was a little surprised because I'm an easy cry with this kind of stuff.
You are.
And I didn't actually like choke up. And I was a little surprised by that because there were moments where I thought like I maybe should, but it just didn't quite hit me enough to do that. And that's probably on me on that one.
The only thing that actually got me to choke up for real on the first watch was King Shark saying he didn't have friends.
No, the closest I got to really like having one of those moments. And you know, just because I don't choke up doesn't mean I don't really appreciate a moment. Like, the closest I got to really getting super emotional was later when Ratcatcher is like kind of leaning on him and just like trusting him and going to sleep. And he kind of realizes like, you know, I have actual friends now.
Yeah.
That's, you know, actually, as I'm describing the scene, I actually feel a little bit emotional. So it was probably on me that I wasn't feeling that last night.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think if I watched that scene right now, I might actually choke up a little bit.
Yeah,
it was a good scene. Joel, by the way, Sly. Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Such a subtle performance.
Yeah, he did a really good job.
Great job.
I do have to go back on what I just said, though. I did definitely choke up when Flag died. Joel Kinnaman just played it so well.
Oh, he and did. What was his last line? What did he say about Peacemaker?
I don't remember.
It was.
I'm sorry.
I forget too. He did murder him with words, though.
Yeah.
It was a Reddit murdered by words moment. Like I'm just blanking. All I remember is like his last. It was something along the lines of like Peacemaker, go fuck yourself. Like you call yourself yeah. Peacemaker, a fucking.
You're a joke.
Is that it?
Yeah. Something like you call yourself Peacemaker, what a joke, or something like that.
Oh, okay, I could see that.
Yeah, that got me, and the Starro thing at the end it came very close.
Starro was.
Yeah, I was happy floating and looking at stars. That was a heartbreaker.
That was rough.
Just like, you know what? He should have been angry. He should have been tearing the shit out of the earth.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Agreed.
30 years.
I mean, one of the only moments that really fell flat for me was like the whole, we have all this power and, you know, it's going to be rats that chew up Starro.
Uh-huh.
I was like, a part of this makes sense. And they're not wrong about like the sheer number of rats in a city is...
It's their startling. City. Yeah. That was a good note. I liked that.
It was. And yeah. I did like it, but I think it's probably to the credit of the film. There were moments where I'm like, man, but come on, it could have been like a fun moment where like Polka Dot Man was like taking off an arm and the rats were taking off a leg. And then I was like, yeah, you know what? That's probably part of the point of the film is not everyone makes it.
Well, yeah.
This is not, you know, the Avengers. Like not everyone gets a heroic moment. Or like Polka Dot Man, you get like that one moment and you're gone.
Yeah. I loved how they're like walking out of the wreckage, all the corpses with starfish on their faces. And King Shark is going, Nom? They're like, no, Nom, no, Nom, no.
No, that was actually a really good callback overall. It was just when they were like, Shark, Nom, go for it. And then later we're like, no Nom. Bad Nom right now. No. Good Nom later. Oh, that really cracked me up. Like one of the first scenes when they were, when Starro starts releasing his little tiny stars. And like most of the crew for various reasons is able to fight it off.
Mm-hmm.
And for King Shark, it's basically just him going like, nah, 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 nah. Like,
yeah.
He's not even trying to fight anything off. It's just he's slightly impenetrable. He's just, like, swatting at them. Like, God damn it. Fucking get off me.
Yeah.
Swats at him like fucking flies in Alabama.
Yep.
Near a cookout on Sunday afternoon.
Man, our listener, Ryan Huelsman, mm-hmm. man, he tricked me. He got me.
Uh-huh.
He posted a picture of Jaro and he was like, well, I didn't expect that in the post credit scene. And I was like, what the hell did you see that I didn't see? I'm like messaging him. I'm like, what the hell is happening? Did you see Jaro? And then I was like thinking like, maybe they have Jaro in a jar. Maybe he's in a jar and wherever they've got Peacemaker. Where? And he was like, nah, I'm just messing with you.
I was deeply flipping back right now just to make sure I didn't miss something too.
I was like,
what is he,
asshole? Then that just reminds me of that fantastic Lower Decks Star Trek episode where the someone transcends and sees a giant panda eating a leaf and mm-hmm. cosmically. He's like, why is he smiling? What does he know?
I did congratulate Ryan earlier this evening about his boy making it, because I don't know if anyone in the world was happier about King Shark actually coming out of this alive.
Oh no, I was ecstatic, man. Like when he like landed with all those things on him, all those fish on him, mm-hmm. I was like, oh God, don't kill King Shark.
Wait, stupid moment, but uh-huh. I really loved it. Like he does. He comes in, he's engulfed. The whole team panics a little bit. One of my favorite moments is like there's this tiny moment where Harley's just grabbing one of the fish and just like just both hands pulling it off of him.
Mm-hmm.
Like even in the stupidity of all the water flowing and just this being a bad call. And I don't know. And I really loved it. Like,
yeah.
Among other things, the film did a great job of explaining that Harley is a team player. Like, not that Birds of Prey didn't. Like, I think it did maybe even a better job of that, yeah, for sure. And then giving her an actual fucking team and, you know, star role and all the time and everything. And that's fucking great. I love that film. But this one, she does just play a part of an ensemble role and yeah, does it in a way that, like, you do get to see her character grow. She doesn't just, like, she's not the same person she walked into that film, or as she walked into that film. I honestly, like, and I wasn't completely cognizant of how she came in and out of that film until the last bit where she's just kind of staring at the building and, you know, she says, like, Rick was my friend.
Yeah.
Like, just a tiny moment where, like, I don't know, that part kind of broke me a little bit. I don't know. It was a good moment.
Yeah, it was good. That was good. Yes, yeah, I like the movie more. I'm going to go over to my Letterbox and maybe pop it up to 4 stars instead of 3. Like, I'm not that 3 is bad, mind you. Most things that I like wind up at a 3 because, I mean, you know, I'm not mad. You know,
no,
you can't just rate everything 8 or something. You can't. It's anarchy.
Yeah.
You know. But
I get it.
I even have movies that I've rated a 3 that I hated, but I was just like, no, they went for it. They knew what they were doing.
Oh yeah.
They knew what they were doing. It just wasn't my cup of tea. I'm not going to rate it poorly just because I didn't like it.
Yeah. But they went for it and they did that part efficiently.
That's be fair.
Yeah.
But no, I'll
actually, that's pretty precisely how I feel about Tarantino in general. I'm not saying he's bad. I'm saying he's probably great, just not for me.
Yeah, and weirdly, I think he is for me.
Yeah.
I've come to realize more and more. I'm like, oh, this is really solid. Oh.
this could... this is something we should address one day, maybe. Like, me and you watch Tarantino just somewhere in the middle of the career and just see what happens.
Oh, I mean, fine, that's fine. We can do that. I don't know what we'd watch.
I'm open to it. Or just late. I haven't watched Django.
Oh, Django's... It's a good movie. It gets a lot of crap.
I believe you. I just...
But, you know.
Never struck me as something that I was going to take time out for.
Yeah. Django is basically... this might be the selling point for you. Django is like, you know, a superhero movie for that time.
Oh, I know. I get
like,
it.
It's... But, you know, not everybody dug that one, and I understand a lot of their reasons.
Trying not to quote Hamilton right now. Yeah, I get it. I'm interested, but the context, I didn't make time for it. That's all it is.
Hateful Eight's also really good. Very.
I hear great things. I mean, also spoken volumes about Kurt Russell's facial hair in that movie. It is goddamn glorious.
Yeah,
that's what that is.
It's a solid whodunit.
That is actually,
I enjoyed
it. I said goddamn. That his facial hair is maybe proof that God exists. That is insane.
That's interesting. Interesting take. I hadn't heard that take. But yeah,
to be so natural and yet so magnificent.
I don't know how natural it was, but.
I believe it was good. I mean, you know, point is, Kurt Russell can grow some, you know, face carpet pretty well.
Yeah. That just sounds gross when you say it that way.
What do you want? Thin? Shag? Linoleum? I got you.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, no, when you and I first started hanging out,
mm-hmm,
I would have said, stop watching Tarantino after, you know, Pulp Fiction. I didn't like Kill Bill, whatever. I've now since gone back, loved Kill Bill, loved Kill Bill 2, and have just started, you know, consuming the catalog. And I'm like, damn it.
Look, I might too.
Yep. I think I'm down. I think I'm down with
age,
it all.
Like, age changes things. And, I
might
come back and go, man, you know what? I misjudged this. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
That could.
All right. I think we're done. It feels like we're done, doesn't it?
I don't have anything directly on my heart. No.
I am, you know, even for my problems, super excited and happy for James Gunn that he got to do this. I honestly wish it was a little more, pieced into the DCEU, a bigger part of an overarching story, but I like that kind of shit.
Two questions for you. On the one hand,
sure.
A statement and a question. I agree. It's not necessarily pieced in, but it is.
It is. Yeah.
I mean, the characters are there.
Unconnected.
Yeah. They're all basically working off the same timeline. That timeline is, you know, because of, I mean, goddamn it. Even if it's because of the opening scenes of Suicide Squad, that timeline is tied in like the death of Superman and everything.
Yeah.
These are characters that exist in the early DCEU.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm wondering, though, is, like, how'd you feel about the opening? Like, before the actual opening, before Savant?
What do you mean? What, just them landing on the beach?
No. The actual, like, Warner Brothers opening for that film.
I mean, it was just the same old CGI Batman, Superman thing.
No. The one where it shows a bunch of clips.
What did I miss?
I feel like you might have hit skip on this.
I did not, but I don't know what you're talking about precisely.
I'm just going to go through it. First shot is Cavill and Man of Steel in flight, prepare to enter a universe of hope. And then it's Cavill in the middle of the flight scene, and then courage, and it's Wonder Woman in No Man's Land. Then magic, and it's like the scene of Batson jumping off the rooftop.
Mm-hmm.
A universe of Titans, and then it's literally Raven, Misfits, Doom Patrol, Madness. It's just, you know, Joaquin's Joker.
Hmm.
And then Bird of Prey. So then it goes to Harley Quinn and Birds of Prey, sandwiched and between it, like, and there's a moment from her in her animated series.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. I thought it was just
a universe of DC now streaming on HBO Max. And just a lot of fucking Snyder shit. Like, it's...
Here's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
My wife queued up the movie.
Uh-huh.
So, like, the first thing I see is, like, the Warner Brothers Studios, and I'm hearing Johnny Cash.
Ah, okay. I got you.
Which, by the way...
Yeah.
I always love to hear Johnny Cash. Like, that was the correct song.
I adored that song as an intro to this fucking... that was fantastic.
And Savant, like, throwing the ball to the beat. Like, oh, God. Oh, that was good. That was solid.
Yeah. Now you hear that train coming. Yeah, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they had
this. That's why I didn't see it.
They had this whole, it was funny to me because it was like, this is, you know, the next big movie for you after a series of events. And this intro, which, you know, by the way, it followed an intro where it was like the same CGI thing where it was like Green Lantern, you know, other mm-hmm. other people that haven't shown up anywhere. But it was the same one that they keep using that is theoretically part of, like, you know, this is a DC thing right now. But they did this other thing before that was just like hilariously kind of groping at the DC fandom in certain ways.
Yeah, and weirdly, because I'm like, I mean, are you trying to sell people who are doing like a trial for HBO Max? Are you just reminding them there's a bunch of other shit?
Oh no, I
on the service
deeply think that was the actual purpose. Just cracked me up that they were actually going to do that. And then, by the way, we're going to keep these things, you know, on the service, ready to go. And they probably can, but I think there's an agreement between Warner Bros. And theaters right now, maybe. But, like, I think September 5th, like, it's 30 days on this streaming service.
Right.
And then it's off for a second. And it'll probably offer like a hot fucking second. It'll be back in no time. But it's just enough that if you were trying to watch it at home, if you're going to watch it again, you have to go back to a theater, I guess. I don't fucking know what the game plan is with that. It doesn't make sense to me. Like, if you're going to release it streaming, just let it fucking be there. Like,
yeah, we're in a tough time where they're trying to appease theaters, and you know, I've been seeing some hubbub over the fact that it looks like the Suicide Squad might be releasing lower than Birds of Prey, but we're in the middle of a pandemic. We got the Delta, we got Delta Plus, they got all this bullshit out there. People don't want to go to a damn theater, and the people who do are idiots, and they're going to wind up in an ICU with a damn worse than a muzzle on their face. Mm-hmm. So, crazy times.
We're at a point where I was at this point a year ago where I'm like, I'm not sure about the future of theaters. And then now a year later, because we had this glimpse of hope it really is working in some areas for sure. Not working at all in some other areas.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't help that you got people like Joe Rogan over here telling his 11 million listeners that the Delta variant is, a result of the vaccine making COVID mutate. I mean, good God.
Yeah, because that's how that works.
I don't see.
I mean,
theaters last. Look,
I want to put Joe Rogan in context real quick. And God, I hate to be the podcaster that does this finally, but
I'm sure plenty have.
he is famous for. I mean, his stand up is one thing, but he is at this point in his life famous for getting in a lot of fights and taking a ton of hallucinogens.
Yeah,
and I just want to suggest. I'm not saying he's not right about some things. He is a free thinker. He is even born of, some pedigree that as a person who loves stand-up, I really deeply appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
But do you want to just, take him for his word?
He's gone a little off the rails.
He's been punched a lot, and he spends a lot of time in a sensory deprivation tank with fucking hallucinogens. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with either of those two things.
Yeah.
Just don't.
You want to trip out all day on DHT and all sorts of shit, that's fine. Whatever it's called. What is it called? Is that it? The DHT?
It's one of the many substances, yeah. I'm just saying.
He likes whatever it is that makes you see the crystal people.
Any of them will, if you do them right.
I mean.
I'm just saying. I'm not saying he's wrong about everything. He's for sure not.
He's entertaining, but I don't take his advice on medical issues.
Yeah, just don't.
God's sake.
That's all I'm trying to suggest. It's like, don't take his advice in matters where he should not be stepping.
But no, I don't see a way out of this pandemic.
I want to know a hit guy. I'm gonna ask that dude. If I don't know how many shrooms I can take at one time, I'm gonna ask Joe Rogan.
Yeah. I don't see us getting out of the pandemic and still having theaters. I just don't.
I don't either.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I mean, it's not that they won't exist. I genuinely think the future of theaters is because it's still going to be a space that's built a certain way. And I think it's going to eventually be, if we can get the whole fucking thing under control, get back to a point where it's like, cool. So do you want to rent this thing out for do you want to play GoldenEye on this screen? Because we can do that for a night for $400.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just literally spitballing a price point here. I'm just saying. I think it's going to be a point where you rent things out and, offer people what do you want to see here? But we can offer you the, newest film that you want to see, and that's X price. Or we can, restream whatever it is for you for whatever we have license for.
Yeah.
I think what will be important for the theaters, though, is to, be able to drop the idea that they can only show what they have license to show. If there's a mechanism where they can, stream something on Hulu for somebody, that'll go a long way.
I don't think there's a way to regulate that. If something is on a streaming service and you just somebody rents out the room.
I mean, I agree.
And that's what it'll probably wind up being, is just renting out rooms.
Oh, that's what it'll be, is renting out rooms. my guess is there'll be some there'll be some service fee for being able to show a Netflix entity of any kind that the theaters pay, similar to what they're paying now, just to be able to get into any, series of films.
Mm-hmm.
And then there'll be some rental fee that they pay or, charge. And then, probably an upkick. They have to pay for renting whatever to so-and-so on a big screen, 'cause they're going to make it a premium thing.
Mm-hmm.
The funniest part is the people who, I really hate this. I shouldn't have even said the funniest part. the part that's heartbreaking is the people who have a lot of invested literal materials, like brick and mortar materials, and into the whole fucking universe of what we do is or what we enjoy is just fucking. There's going to be a cost there, and there's nothing to be said for it after. Like, it's like hospitals. You don't see like those sites just get torn down. You don't use them for much else. They're very specific. Like hotels are, you can at least repurpose them into apartments or condos or something. But yeah, certain buildings, once they're built a certain way, fucking it's that or it's dead.
Yeah.
Theaters are pretty similar.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in our area in Birmingham, I can probably name you half a dozen that just, I don't know how many spiders are living there, but I'm assuming they're doing well.
Yeah.
In the thousands.
Yep. All right. Well, I think we're done. We're beyond done.
Yep.
Here, in my opinion.
Agreed.
DCOnScreen.com for every episode. And again, patreon.com/DCOnScreen. If you want to pop over there and throw us some cold cash our way, or a, lukewarm debit, whatever. And
available for both.
I take it we'll be back next week. It seems like there's plenty of news brewing at this point. So thank you so much for listening. And until next time, keep some DC on your screen. Our intro music is by Jason Goss and Michael Shackelford. Michael's band, Galactic Engineers of Magnetic Sounds, or GEMS, can be found on SoundCloud and Bandcamp. Visit DCOnScreen.com to find our Patreon, merch, contact information, and every episode of the show for free, including crossovers we've done with other podcasts. DC OnScreen is a maladjusted production. For more from me and Jason, including sketch comedy, vlogs, parodies, and our improvised web series Hey Guy, visit maladjusted.dv.